The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Good morning and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show here on 1310 KFKA. This is a live show this morning. My name is Chris Stein. I'm a certified financial planner and a finance instructor at Colorado State University. I'm in studio this morning with Jim Salnier, certified financial planner, finishing off his breakfast, so he'll be with us in just a moment.
Good morning.
Peter Scott, who usually joins us on the show, our estate planning attorney, unable to make it this morning, so you'll have to hold off on any of your estate planning questions.
He is listening. He texted me and said, be careful, I'm listening. So good morning, Pete.
Well, I guess you could send in a question. He'll be listening.
Send in a question and we'll call Pete if need be.
Just won't get an immediate answer. So we are, like I mentioned a moment ago, live this morning. So we try to do a couple of live shows every month that allows listeners to call in and ask questions in kind of a live format. You can call us at 970-353-1310 or toll free 877-35-1310. I'm sorry, I skipped a digit there. 877-353-1310. And we will do our best to answer any of your questions on IRAs, retirement plans of any kind, really. Social Security, we do a lot of that.
Estate planning, we can reach out to Pete.
We can. Really anything you can think of regarding someone who is in their 50s and 60s and thinking about their financial life.
If you have a question, we have the answer, unless your question is, what are the winning Powerball numbers tonight?
Oh, that is tonight, yeah.
Because if we knew that, we wouldn't be sharing.
Right. So,
and we wouldn't be here anymore. Just want to throw that out there. If I win $800 million, I'm not here the next day.
You just give up on life that very next day?
No, I would segue the practice down, hire a very competent advisor, pay him an ungodly amount of money.
To come and make your life easy? Yeah, I get it. There's something I'm forgetting.
I don't know. What is it?
I don't know. Well, how about if we remind people what they get if they call? Oh, I remember. Not only can you call, you can also contact us live via email. Jim has his handy-dandy iPad working right now. And you can email us live during the show at jim@jimhelps.com. That's jim@jimhelps.com. And we can actually respond to you directly.
Live.
And that would count as long as you include your contact information.
We won't name it on the radio.
No, we won't divulge. We'll keep everybody.
We protect anonymous. The anonymity of anonymity. I can't say that. Why do I even try? We protect the privacy of our emailers because we figure if they wanted their information used and not be private, they just call. So the emailers want a little bit of privacy.
Even people who call, we only use their first name.
Correct. So but in email, we won't even use that.
No.
In fact, we have two emails that we're going to get to today, and one of them puts, I'm an iTunian from Oregon. You can use this email on your show as long as I am George.
Perfect.
So that's why we do that.
Well, I'm glad they gave us permission for something we would have done anyway. So we encourage everyone to call or email.
But our first email today will be an iTunian, which for those listening on iTunes, that's the little nickname we give our iTunes crowd, iTunians. So if you are – you don't have to be in Colorado to reach out to us. If you're anywhere in the nation – send us an email or give us a call. We had that gentleman from Duluth who used to call live all the time. Remember? He hasn't called us in a while.
No, I think he had a series of specific questions over a few months, and once he got all those questions answered, he might not listen.
So he doesn't listen to his live anymore?
I'm not quite sure.
Hmm. That's a bummer. But he was in – I wonder how cold it is today in Duluth because it's pretty damn cold here today.
I'm pretty sure it's very cold in Duluth.
Probably colder than here.
Every day this
– I heard because I think the Vikings are playing in the playoffs and it's supposed to be one
tomorrow.
Of the coldest games.
Tomorrow, I believe it's going to be 1 degree.
At
them,
kickoff?
At game time.
At game time.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cold.
That is cold. That's very cold. So
anyways, no matter where you are through the country, you can call us or send us an email. Our first email that we're going to get to today is from a gentleman in Oregon. And he did email us December 17th. So it's taken us quite a little bit of time because of the holiday. You losing something? You're looking down.
You can continue talking while I'm doing it.
But I'm looking across the table trying to actually look at you as I talk, and you're not paying attention.
I dropped a paperclip on the floor.
It must be a paperclip you love. You're really trying to find it.
Oh, it's all the way over by you. So
I'll get you
I'd like to clip my papers.
I'll get you the paperclip.
It's one of those little alligator clips.
Oh, I see it. It is right near me.
Yes. But it's missing one of the handles, so it's challenging to use.
It doesn't even work. It's missing a clip.
I know. It's a half an alligator clip.
Okay. So as Chris gets his broken alligator clip working, this gentleman emailed us on December 17th. I emailed him back, said that I would address his question. He really doesn't have a very – it's a very long email, but his question is very minor. It's more of a confirmation he's looking for than an actual specific question. So I'm going to read a lot of his email. Of course, we're not going to give his full information. We are going to call him George.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
Yes, our favorite
Daffy Duck
actor of all time, Bugs Bunny.
Does he qualify as an actor?
When you're growing up with Bugs Bunny, he qualifies as an actor. Okay. You know they have new Looney Tunes out now? No. Not the little kid Looney Tune ones, you know, where the Bugs Bunny and Daffy were kids.
Yeah.
They're regular Looney Tunes where Bugs is grown.
Right. Yeah.
It's just new. I found it on that Cartoon Boom or the Cartoon Network.
Boomerang.
And really bad. The guy who does the voices doesn't sound anything like Mel Blanc's voices. And Bugs is not – you know how Bugs used to be smart and could do anything? Now he's kind of dumb. And he just gets himself into these dumb situations. So I'm not really a fan of the new Looney Tunes.
That's too bad.
Yeah, they really blew it. But anyways, I don't know how we got on that. But okay, so this gentleman really described his situation in detail. And he's looking for some confirmation that if his strategies make sense to us. Mm-hmm. And I reviewed this with you. And the short answer is yes. It seems like he's on a very sound footing
well,
here.
Well, I would say maybe.
But it's a possibility. We'll get into that. So let me set the stage and then I'll let you give your opinion. I'm not going to read the entire email because it is quite lengthy. So I'm going to begin with where he starts with, I am 59 years old and I retired last May.
It's a fine age.
It's a fine age to retire at.
Well, it's a fine age just in general.
And when I originally read this, 59 and retired, I initially jumped to the conclusion, which I sometimes do. I jump to conclusions. This must be a government worker. Because not too many private employers or employees can retire at 59. And as luck would have it, yes, I was correct because he goes on to explain he's a government worker. So he says, I am 59 years old and I retired last May. He works for the federal government. I have $2 million in assets. I am receiving my federal government annuity of $3,500 per month. So not bad, 59 years old, being paid for the rest of his life, $3,500 a month, adjusted for inflation. Very good situation he's in. $2 million in assets. Mm-hmm. Very good situation. I also receive a Social Security supplement of $1,500 a month that ends at age 62. Let's explain for our listeners what he's talking about right there, because a lot of people won't understand.
Right.
Years ago, before they changed the rules in the early 80s, federal government employees were never in the Social Security system. They were in a retirement system called CSRS. And under CSRS, they never paid into Social Security. Reagan changed that in 83 and made it where federal government employees actually pay into Social Security, which I could never understand when they originally passed Social Security, why they didn't put federal government employees in it. They put everyone else in it, but they exempted federal government employees from Social Security. It's kind of like if it's good for the goose, it should be good for the gander. CSRS, the old retirement program that the feds have, is wonderful. I mean, it pays a cherry pension, pays a lot of money. So maybe that's why they didn't.
But they don't get Social Security.
But they don't get Social Security.
Yeah.
And maybe that's one of the reasons they didn't want to get out of CSRS. It was a very good program. But the new program, which this listener is in, is called FERS, F-E-R-S. And in that pension program, the federal government employees pay into FERS and pay into Social Security. And their total pension, so to speak, for working for the federal government is a combination of both. Well, they have a very special benefit under FERS. If you retire before you're eligible for Social Security, in this particular case, the gentleman said he retired at 59 and he receives $3,500 a month in his federal pension, his FERS pension. They also will pay you what they call a Social Security supplement. And they will pay you that supplement until you become eligible for Social Security. So from 59 to 62, for the next 3 years, they're going to pay him $1,500 a month. Why? Because he's not eligible for his quote-unquote full pension yet, because he's not eligible for Social Security. But because he was eligible to retire, they're giving him that offset.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough?
And just to make it clear, if you haven't been a long-time listener, the first age of eligibility for Social Security is 62. So he didn't have the option of claiming his Social Security at 59. It's not even available to him until 62. So this is a way for them to say, oh, you haven't quite hit the age yet, so we're going to make it up to you with this assistance, this additional supplement, they call it, so that it's as if you were collecting your Social Security, but it's not really coming out of the Social Security system. It's coming out of the pension plan as a supplement.
So it gives federal government FERS employees a unique planning opportunity. At 62, which is the gist of his conversation, by the way, and I'll get back to his email in a second. At 62, he has an option now. Because his supplement of $1,500 a month stops, mm-hmm. He can turn on his Social Security, which will pretty much equal his supplement. It's not quite, but very close. Or he can delay his Social Security. And longtime listeners, or even hopefully short-time listeners, at least know this basic element of Social Security. The longer you wait, the more you get.
Per month.
Per month. You wait 6 months, you're going to get more than if you retired 6 months earlier. The longer you wait up till age 70, the more Social Security you get. So his question, and FERS planning in general, is when the supplement stops, should they turn Social Security on or should they delay it? And in the meantime, generate the money that the supplement was paying them by spending from assets. So that's a lot of the planning we do for people, and it's kind of what he asks. So I'll go on to his email. He then describes, the supplement ends when I turn 62 years old because I am now eligible for Social Security. He then describes his wife. He says, my wife worked part-time and has a small pension coming to her. She worked she was a teacher. He doesn't say, but she has a 403B, he said, which is pretty much what teachers have, and a small pension. So I'm guessing she was a teacher in the Oregon pension system. We both have small Roth IRAs. Here is my plan. I would like to spend all the income I am receiving until I turn 62. At age 62, my supplement ends, and I would like to begin withdrawing from my wife's 403B plan. We will also turn her pension on, which will begin paying $300 a month. So remember, he's going to lose $1,500 a month, but he's going to turn on his wife's pension then of $300 a month, so the net loss is about $1,200 a month. None of these numbers are adjusted for inflation because they will have inflation adjustments. We're just using today's dollars. My intent is to spend from my my wife's 403B and maybe from my TSP if needed until I reach age 70, at which point I will turn on my Social Security. Let's explain to our listeners what TSP is. TSP stands for Thrift Savings Plan. It is what the federal government gives their employees to save. It's very similar to a 401k, but it's called a TSP. Works in a very similar manner. Federal employees put in about 5% of their salary, and they will receive about a 5% match. It's a little different. There's a little extra going on there, but I'm trying to keep this basic. So federal government employees have a very good retirement plan, if you can't tell. They have the FERS pension, which means they simply work for the federal government for a certain amount of years. The government will give them a pension for the rest of their lives. This gentleman is getting $3,500 a month in FERS, which is guaranteed by the government and adjusted every year for inflation if there is a COLA adjustment. This year, 2016, there was no COLA, so they don't get a pay raise. In addition, they get Social Security. If they retire before age 62, they get a supplement that pays them a little extra, as this gentleman is talking about, and they get a FERS pension. If you put in 5% of your salary, the government will give you another 5%. And that pension, that TSP plan is where they put their actual contributions in. They have 5 investment choices, all low-cost index funds that they can invest in, as well as funds that are called the L funds, which are more lifestyle. We won't get into the specific investments the federal government employees have, but they essentially have a quote-unquote 401k, and they have Social Security, and they have a guaranteed pension. Very good situation, I think you'll agree, Chris.
Yes, not typical for the private sector, for sure.
Correct. So they do have a unique situation for all the years that they worked for the federal government. So basically, his question, he goes on, per your lecturing, and I think he's referring to you there, Chris, because you go on and on.
Oh, yeah.
Per your lecturing, I believe I'm on the right track with a sound plan. Do you agree? I'll let you take over.
Well, I want to hear the plan.
That was his plan. I just explained the whole plan.
That's not much of a plan.
That's his plan.
That's one basic thing.
That's his plan.
Okay. So he is going to live on his pension and his supplement until 62. Then he's considering delaying his Social Security instead of turning it on to replace the supplement and spending out of his assets, which you mentioned before, they'd amassed about $2 million worth of assets. And that gives them the ability to maximize their Social Security check by not turning it back on until age 70, substantially higher, about 85% higher than if he had claimed it at 62. So is it a good plan, he's saying? Well, if he's going to – if he really needs that amount of what we call secure income, could make perfect sense. If he doesn't have any other – goals for that $2 million, yeah, it becomes pretty easy to budget if you have a set amount of income coming in, like he has before 62. He kind of knows if he can live on that without having to dip into his assets, he's proven to himself he can live on simply his pension and the Social Security. That could make perfect sense because one of the things that we've talked about before is that in this low interest rate environment, it's difficult to turn those assets he has into secure income, which we usually describe as taking assets and turning them into some type of fixed annuity. Most common, the most straightforward type of an annuity is a single premium immediate annuity, which is a way for you to hand over a batch of money to the insurance company, and then they guarantee to pay you kind of like a personal pension. They pay you a monthly amount for the rest of your life. And these can take a variety of forms, but that's the basic gist of one of these. So we have a lot of people who maybe don't have enough secure income, but they have assets. So there's a way to convert one to the other. Or in this case, this person appears to have both. They have quite a lot of secure income and a substantial amount of assets. So the only question I would ask of him, it seems to make sense. And if they don't have any other designs or any other plans for those saved assets, that because he's talking about spending down his TSP or 403B for 8 years between age 62 and 70, it could make absolutely perfect sense. Because if he's confident that then he can live on just the secure income, the pension income, and the Social Security from he and his wife both combined, they'll never really have to touch the rest of those assets that are left for anything.
Except the required minimum distributions.
Well, yes. Don't forget those at 70 and a half. But then they can use that, whatever's left, for whatever they want. Major purchases, inheritance, charitable donations, because they could be set with just their secure income, could cover all of their expenses. I would just make absolutely sure they've looked at that whole picture. And it seems like a very viable strategy on face value. They haven't given us a lot of other details about, we don't know if they have any other family obligations, any kids that might need special assistance. We don't know anything about their medical issues. Medical expenses can be tremendous. You'd want to look at those types of things.
Right. And that's exactly what I was thinking as well. On face value, as Chris said to this George from Oregon, I think you have made a sound decision. If I had to choose yes or no, I would choose yes. If this was a CFP question, if we were taking the CFP test and they laid this out and our choices were, does this sound reasonable or not? If those were the only two choices, I'd be coloring the box yes. Mm-hmm. The reality is this isn't a question on the Certified Financial Planner exam. This is an actual living person. So the only caveat I want to throw out there, we don't know enough of your other ancillary items going on in your life to say definitively, this sounds good. I will say at face value, it sounds good. There are tremendous planning opportunities here, though. Tremendous. And that's what I want to encourage him on.
And what Jim means by that is they've essentially put themselves in a position to have a lot of flexibility.
Exactly. So I would encourage him to evaluate, again, is there any medical issues or do you have children with special needs? If you do have a child with special needs, and he doesn't indicate that on here, one of the worst assets to leave them is a very large retirement plan like an IRA, a TSP, a 403B, a 401K. Those are terrible assets to leave children with special needs because the child will become the owner of that retirement asset. The asset will be considered income. The required distributions that come out of it, because there's a law that those happen, will most likely, I can't say will definitely, but most likely, 9 times out of 10, cause that recipient to lose any type of governmental support they are receiving and governmental benefits. So you often have to leave the assets to a trust. When you leave retirement assets to a trust, especially a special needs trust, the taxation of those assets can be astronomical. Here's where we could really use Pete. But if you remember, when Peter Scott is here, he talks about trusts having terrible taxation issues, that if a trust generates more than $12,500, all income above that is taxed at the highest marginal rate, 39.6%. Add on that 2.3 or 2.8, whatever it is, Medicare surtax and state taxes, you could be losing 50% of the money in a trust to taxes. And the money has to stay in the trust, Chris, because if it goes to the child, the child could lose benefits. So it goes to the child, but it goes in a special way where it doesn't hurt them. But in the meantime, it means the trust is going to pay huge amounts in taxes. So what we often use is life insurance. So what I want to encourage this listener is if you have a special needs child, or if you just have children in general and you want to leave them an inheritance, or if you have a favorite financial planner radio show host and you want to help him, just hypothetically speaking.
Or maybe a worthy charity.
Well, I suppose.
Just to throw it out there as an option.
Speaking on behalf of radio show hosts throughout the nation.
That wouldn't qualify as a charitable donation, though. Just be clear.
Well, just – all right. So if you want to leave it to a charity and not your favorite radio show host throughout the nation, that's up to you. Life insurance could be something he can consider. He's only 59 years old. If his secure income – remember, this man is going to be generating a tremendous amount of guaranteed lifetime income. Right now, he's getting $3,500 plus another $1,500. His Social Security, I'm going to guess, is about $2,000 to around $2,500 a month. If he has a pension this size and that much in assets, he got paid very well. So that could generate another, and with a spousal benefit on there, my goodness, who knows how much he'd be able to generate Social Security, maybe another $40,000, $50,000 a year at age 70. He may be in a situation where he can peel some of that guaranteed lifetime income off and say to himself as he does his budgeting, I'm going to take $1,000 a month or $1,500 a month and just earmark it towards a life insurance policy. And that life insurance policy, $1,000 or $1,500 a month in life insurance on a healthy 59-year-old could purchase $2, $3 million of guaranteed life insurance that is received 100% tax-free. And now that money can be left to a special needs trust, and you're not going to get hit with a lot of the taxation issues that we just described.
Or kids without or special
kids,
needs, or a charity.
Or charity,
or all kinds
or
of
your
things.
Favorite radio show host from throughout the country.
Right.
Anybody can be left that money. Now, for our compliance people who were listening, I'm tongue-in-cheek on the radio show host. He doesn't have to leave me any money. He can just mail me a check. But that's not going to go over too well. I'm joking on that,
but
too.
But that's Jim brings that up because that's one of the strategies that can be deployed to accomplish certain goals that you might have with your money. You don't have to. It doesn't have to simply be, okay, I collect this and I have this sitting in my TSP and 403B. I'm just going to roll with it until I pass away. You're in a unique situation where you have all the flexibility in the world. You are not scrambling, wondering where you're going to scrape together a few pennies here and there to be able to put food on the table. He's beyond that. He's at a stage. He's got set himself up. He and his wife, it appears, that they aren't worrying about where money's going to come to put food on the table, but they have more money than they need to put food on the table. So what is the best way that I can benefit those that I choose? Might be myself, right? Might be maybe he's looking for ways to benefit himself, not a charity or kids or whatever else radio show host. But he can choose. He's in the great position of being able to direct the benefits of his hard work and savings.
Especially if he's charitably inclined. Let's get back to that, Chris, because he's in a unique situation where he can make a very meaningful impact with his estate. Because you can take that life insurance and leave it to charity. But here's the thing. He has a $2 million asset base. Let's just assume, because we don't know, all $2 million is in a TSP plan. That is going to be hit with taxes at his death tremendously. And under new rules that Obama is pushing and the Republicans are supporting, let's make that clear, they want to get rid of the stretch IRA, the ability for a non-spouse beneficiary to inherit an inherited account, retirement account and keep that retirement account for their own retirement. It's called a stretch IRA. They're getting rid of that. They will get rid of it. I predict within a year or two tops, it will be history. And they want a non-spouse beneficiary to close an inherited retirement account within 5 years after the death of the owner and pay taxes on it. That's going to be – you think Social Security changes got me going. Wait till they get rid of this.
Well, just imagine this situation. There's $2 million in there. He passes away. It goes to his kids, a non-spouse beneficiary in this case. Over 5 years, let's say they split it up and take it out evenly, that's $400,000 a year in income that's going to come out and go to that person. Imagine those of you who happen to be making $400,000 a year – you know how much tax bill you pay. For those of you who aren't making that, it's a huge chunk. It's a huge chunk
in taxes. Between state and federal taxes, you can lose over half of that money every year. That's why they're getting rid of it.
Right. Where instead, if it was stretched out over that person's life, which is the stretch IRA, then you take it out. You are forced to take it out, but it comes out a little bit at a time, so you remain in a much lower marginal tax bracket.
Lower. So the reason they're getting rid of it is they want to take half of it in taxes, income taxes. We're talking income taxes here. So when I come back, it's a break now, I'm going to explain to him how life insurance can be a wonderful thing, especially if he's charitably inclined, on how to leave his kids all the money in that TSP. And not give half of it to the very government that helped him amass it in the first place.
Great. So this is the Retirement and IRA Show. When we come back from this break, we are going to visit the start of, we're off a little bit of a year now. I'm going to have another talk with Tina. We're going to look back to the beginning of Social Security. We're technically looking back at 1936 now, not 35.
I kind of overrode that and thought we should always look at 1935.
No, I said the same thing.
Oh, she went to 36?
She went to 36.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, I know. It's a good song, though, so we're going to roll with it. So when we come back, we're going to hear a great song from the film Swing Time, which starred the popular pairing of Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. So we'll be right back after this break. If you'd like to call in with a live question, our number is 970-353-1310. We'll get to your question as soon as we come out of the break. Otherwise, we'll be back with you in just a moment.
Someday, when I'm awfully low and the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you and the way you look tonight.
Good morning and welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show.
But your love,
as we hear a song technically from 1936, but it is in the era of 1935. Which was the year that Social Security started. That's why we look back. We talk about Social Security on this show quite a lot. So in kind of our reminiscing of back to the beginnings of what we know of as the Social Security system we deal with today, that is a top song. We actually went on to win an Academy Award for Best Original Song in 1936. I'm sure they were working on it in
1935.
So this still is in the vein of the beginnings of Social Security. But the song was written by Jerome Kern with lyrics by Dorothy Fields and has become a pop standard performed by many artists, including, as we heard, the original Fred Astaire there.
Very nice.
So that was a good song. The Way We Look Tonight. I'm sorry, The Way You Look Tonight.
The Way You Look Tonight.
It's all about her.
It's always about the woman.
As it should be. So we were dealing with question, but
people
we would
can call us.
Priority, right. when we're live in studio like we are today, the priority is we'll interrupt our
regularly scheduled programming
at any time for a live caller. We'd love to hear from you. Our number is 970-353-1310, 877-353-1310, and this would be the beginning of the month, all live shows where you call in or email and include your contact information. You get entered into the pie drawing. So at the end of this month, on the last live show, which will be in a couple weeks, I believe, we will randomly draw from all the people who've called in on the live shows for that month, and you will receive a coupon from us for a
Free Fat Albert's pie.
Which
very fine pie. I had the chocolate supreme at Christmas. I believe you did as well.
I did. It was excellent. And the people I shared it with that were from out of town said it was the best chocolate pie they'd ever had.
Yeah. Fat Albert's is just wonderful pies. Mm-hmm. So we're very pleased that they – I wouldn't necessarily say sponsor the show, but they support the show. And they have been donating a pie goodness, now for probably 4 years, 5 years now. One pie a month to all our listeners, and we greatly, greatly appreciate Fat Albert's for doing that. Anybody in the Greeley area of Colorado knows Fat Albert's. But if you're listening from Fort Collins or Loveland or any of the surrounding Front Range towns, you might want to take a jaunt over to Greeley someday and buy a Fat Albert's pie, because you will not be disappointed.
Or sit and have lunch. It's not just a pie place.
Right,
It's a restaurant. They serve lunch and dinner. I don't know about breakfast. I don't believe they do breakfast.
I don't think they do.
They definitely do lunch and dinner.
Yes.
And
because you get the liver and onions.
I don't. My wife does. Oh. My wife really likes the liver and
onions.
Which
is disgusting.
There. I agree.
I like the onions. Not so much the liver.
They do it well there, so if you like that kind of thing, I think it's great. But I personally am not a liver guy.
Right.
So my wife, for some reason, she likes all kinds of livers. She likes calf liver, which is typical liver and onions. She loves those little chicken livers that you saute. And I'd rather eat lima beans, I think. Liver is the lima beans of the meat family.
Yeah, I don't like lima beans either.
I know. It gives me the same pasty feel in my mouth, and that's why I don't like it. Anyway, they have plenty of other things other than liver and onions. That's just one item on their menu. But I think we have a call, maybe.
I think we have a call, so I'm trying to hold off getting back to our email.
To see. This might just be a, hey, what time does the radio station open?
Or he's hanging up. I don't know. Oh, Micah hung up, but it looks like the guy's still on the line.
Well, we'll see in just a second.
He's not telling us anything.
It's fine.
But if anybody wants to reach out to Chris and I directly, we are actual living, breathing, practicing financial advisors. We want our Northern Colorado listeners to know that, and of course our iTunian listeners throughout the nation to realize we do work with people. So if anybody does want to reach out, especially now that it's a new year, we call it a new year, new you, and it's just a time where you can take a New Year's resolution to try to get your retirement and finances in order, we offer what we call a coffee and a second opinion. It's just a time to come into the office, and if you are in another state listening to us off of iTunes, we hold this meeting over the phone. But it just gives you an opportunity to share some thoughts with me, ask me a few questions. We can give you a little bit more specificity, like the gentleman we're talking about today, Chris, from Oregon. If this was a phone conversation we were having with him, we'd be able to pry for a lot of the items that we're suggesting he consider, because it's a more of a live conversation. So it is an opportunity. We call it a coffee and a second opinion. Now being January and the new year is a prime time for that. So if anybody is interested in it, you can call us at our office, which is 970-530-0556. That's 970-530-0556. Or just visit us on the internet at Jim Helps. That's Jim HELPS.com. Click on the Contact Us button and you can schedule a meeting right there.
Perfect. So we do have a call. We have a call from our good friend Steve from Greeley. We'll see if Steve is a common name, so it could be somebody else. But good morning, Steve. Thanks for calling the show.
Good morning. Having never met you, I hope we're friends, though. That's great.
We've become very friendly over the radio, Steve.
We have. How are you doing this morning, Steve?
I'm doing great. However, I do sometimes I call in just to get in for the pie. But,
no,
but
really?
in this situation, I do have a legitimate question.
Okay.
And perhaps you can help me with it. I followed some of your advice and converted some traditional IRAs to a Roth IRA last month. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, that will be all included in tax preparation and so forth. But my question has to do, some of my IRAs are funded with non-deductible contributions. And I understand that in order to determine how much of this conversion might pass tax-free, it requires a calculation wherein you divide your total non-deductible contributions divided by the year-end sum of all of your IRA contributions. My question is, as I research this on the internet, there seems to be a difference of opinion of what is included in that divisor amount, that sum of year-end value of all IRAs. Some folks say it's just your traditional IRAs. Some say it's all of your IRAs. Some say it's all of your IRAs plus your conversion amount. Can you clarify that for me?
Clear as mud. How many IRAs do you have?
Oh, in total?
Yes. Just you, not you and your wife.
Half a dozen.
Okay.
Oh, just me personally?
Right. See, that's let's back up then, Steve. When you did this conversion, did you convert some of your accounts and your wife's accounts or just one of yours accounts?
I only did – this was only my wife's account. I tried to make it simple. This was my first attempt at this. So hers were a little simpler than mine.
Okay, so look at hers. Has no bearing on yours. What's hers is hers. Yours is yours.
Okay.
You do not factor in any Roth IRAs that she has. So if she has existing Roths, you don't have to put them into the calculation. But what you do have to do is get, and hopefully you have been filing Form 8606 throughout the years. That's how the government tracks basis in an IRA. For those listeners who don't know what we're talking about, most of the time when you put money in an IRA, you deduct that contribution on your taxes, so you never pay taxes on it. And I'm going to just take a minute, Steve, to explain that to our listeners. Let's say make $50,000 in a year and you put $5,000 in an IRA. Well, the government says if you put $5,000 in an IRA, you don't have to pay taxes on all $50,000. We're only going to tax $45,000. They're going to let you deduct the money you put into the IRA from your income. So they're not going to tax you now. They're going to nail you later, but they're going to be nice and not tax you now. So that's what we mean by a deductible IRA. However, there are situations where people will put money in an IRA and not deduct it. You don't see it too often anymore since the advent of Roth IRAs in 1998, but occasionally people still put money in a traditional IRA and not deduct it. Most of those people do so because they make too much money in order to deduct it. If you are covered by an employer plan and participate in that employer plan, they limit how much money you can make before you can deduct an IRA contribution. So there are times where people open IRAs and don't deduct it. The government calls that basis. Even though the government loves to tax us, they don't try to tax us twice. They try to be nice and say, hey, we already taxed that dollar. We're not going to tax it again. So when you put money into an IRA and don't deduct it, back to my example, you're making $50,000 a year. You put $5,000 in an IRA, but you realize, wow, because of the rules, I can't deduct that. The government is going to tax all $50,000 you made. Even though you put $5,000 in an IRA and never touched it, and really only had $45,000 to spend, they're going to tax all $50,000. But what they say is file Form 8606 and tell us you're not deducting that, and you're going to keep a running tally of how much money in that IRA is basis. And then they're going to let you take a pro rata approach to that. What you're going to look at, and here's where I'm going to have to say, I'm not quite sure, Steve, I'm going to confirm this with the Ed Slot program, but I remember talking to Ed himself on a case similar to yours, that when somebody is going to do the pro rata calculation, do I use the December 31st value of the previous year to determine the pro rata? Or do I look at the value of the account on the day of the conversion? And if memory serves me correct, Ed told me to look at the value on the day of the conversion, not the December 31st value. So
I further muddied the water.
And when you were asking me this question, I was trying to remember the conversation with it. I remember the conversation with him. We were sitting in he has a cocktail reception on day one all the time for us. And I was talking. I hadn't had many cocktails, so I'm pretty sure I remember the situation. So I'm going to reach out to Ed's group, Steve, and we will mention this on a show again, and you can call in. But I'm not 99% sure he said we look at the value on the day of conversion, but I might be muddying the waters with other conversations. I talked to him about a lot of stuff. So let me confirm that if we look at the December 31st value to figure out pro rata, or if we look at the value on the day of conversion. I just want to confirm that. But how you do the calculation is fairly straightforward, no matter what value you're going to look at. You should have a running tally of what the basis is. That's form 8606. So you just simply go to that form, figure out how much you put in there, and whether or not you look at the December 31st value or the value on the day of conversion, you're going to look at all of your wife's IRAs as one. Not her Roth IRAs, all of her IRAs. And yes, if you have an outstanding conversion that hasn't been calculated, the government's kind of on to that. You can't take money out as a 60-day rollover, say, make the account look like there's nothing in it, do the calculation and say, wow, most of this was basis, do a conversion and then put the money back in the IRA within 60 days. They're on to that little game. So they will make you look at any outstanding rollovers as well. I don't think that's an issue here. I don't think you're looking to game the system. So you're simply going to do is, and Chris is the math guy here, but let's pretend, Chris, there's $10,000 a basis and $100,000 in all her IRAs.
That's 10%.
Exactly. So you just...
So 10% of what you converted is going to be pre-taxed and not subject to taxation in the conversion, but 90% of it is.
Okay.
In that simple. But the key is what Jim mentioned. What's going to go in that denominator? Is it going to be the all accounts, all IRA accounts of hers value as of the day of conversion? Or is it going to be one of these December 31st
dates? I remember this conversation because it was in class I had the question. And you have to raise your hand and wait for them to come to you with a microphone. And the people couldn't see me, so I never got a chance to ask the question. You're not allowed to just stand up and shout it out. So I asked him afterwards, and I could have sworn it had to do with this situation. So I just want to confirm that, Ed. My mind is a little foggy this morning. I'm not quite sure, but not Ed. Ed's the guy I'm going to ask. Steve, okay. I'm going to confirm that with you, because whatever the Ed Slot Group tells me, in my opinion, is gospel and what to pay attention to.
Okay, perfect. Very good.
So we'll check on that, and we've got your contact information, Steve, and we'll have Jim.
I'll reach back out to you, but I'll also let our listeners know on another show what
because that is a
what
good question.
Very good. I appreciate that.
Thanks for calling in, Steve.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm 99% sure because I started thinking you could really game the system.
Yeah, I'm racking my brain as well, and I'm thinking that what you're remembering is correct, but there's funky rules. Sometimes what seems like would be common sense and logical is not the way it's actually written. So we'll have to confirm that.
So I will confirm that. That's why I'm hesitant.
You don't run into these a lot.
You
because
don't.
Most people do not have basis in their IRA. They don't have pre-tax contributions in their traditional IRA. It's a fairly rare occurrence. So this isn't something we run into very often. But there is an answer, and we will absolutely get the answer for you and get back to you.
And one unique thing I might want to share here, and I don't know if this applies to Steve because I'm not sure how old his wife is, but if his wife was working and still had an active 401k, and it might even work if she was retired, if the 401k would allow a retiree to transfer money into it, and a lot don't. But if the 401k allowed retirees to transfer money in, most 401ks, if you are still working for the company, do allow you to transfer money into them. What a lot of people don't know is that in 2002 or 3, I forget, Bush signed the bill. I think it was 2003 the bill became law. Really made it easy to port, they call it portability, move retirement accounts into each other. Mm-hmm. The rules used to be very, very complex. It's a lot easier now. But here's a unique thing you can do. It's kind of like what everybody wants to do. It's like the Yeti. They hear about it, but they don't know if it's real. Everybody hears about the ability to do a tax-free Roth conversion, but they don't know if it's real. One of the things you are allowed to do is move IRAs into 401ks. You are allowed to do that. What you are not allowed to do is move basis in that IRA into a 401k. So a strategy that is perfectly legitimate, perfectly legal, perfectly allowed is to take all your – you got to move all your IRAs, not your Roths, but all your IRAs. Move them into the 401k. What remains in the IRAs is 100% basis. You cannot move basis into a 401k.
So they'll force you to leave it behind. So the IRS recognizes the ability to leave just that behind, and that's what ends up in there.
And now you do the conversion. And what's left? 100% basis, 100% tax-free conversion, which is making me believe I am correct, because you look at the value of the IRA on the day of conversion, not the December 31st value. In our example of a $100,000 IRA, what if she moved $90,000 into a 401k, left the $10,000 in basis? You look on the day of conversion and say, wow, there's $10,000 in here. I put $10,000 in. It's 100% tax-free conversion. That's why I think what I was saying is right, but I'm going to confirm. But anyways, Ed, if you're listening and your wife,
Steve,
I keep saying that. I got Ed Slott on my mind.
Ed might listen too.
Ed might listen to me. Maybe he'll learn something from me if he listens. So, Steve, one of the things, or any listener, you can take an IRA with basis, transfer into the 401k all of the IRA money. What's left is basis, 100% tax-free conversion. Now, when you separate from service, you can take that 401k, move it back to an IRA.
Right. And when it wasn't really tax-free, if you think about it. Taxes were already paid on it.
Right.
So they're just not going to tax you
again. It's just a unique way to get basis into a Roth IRA.
And all of it instead of the prorated
amount. Right. Instead of prorating it, you get it all in at once.
Perfect. So we are coming up on another, actually a top-of-the-hour break, a news break, I believe. And thanks for calling in, Steve. If you'd like to call in with your question, our number is 970-353-1310 or 877-353-1310. In our journey to kind of honor Social Security through music, we're going to look back 40 years. 40 elapsed years was one of the first measurements for them determining what your Social Security benefit would be. So we look back 40 years of some music. That's going to put us in 1976. Our next song is a novelty song based on the popularity of CB radio.
Oh, I know this one, Convoy.
1976. Hey, you're not supposed to give it away right now.
Sorry.
It's supposed to be a mystery through the break.
T.J. McCall, Convoy.
No, you're close. So this is the
C.J. McCall.
So this is the Retirement and IRA show.
Something McCall.
Yes. We'll be back with you in just a moment after this short break.
Was a dark of the moon on the 6th of June in a Kenworth pulling logs. Cab over Pete with a reefer on and a Jimmy hauling hogs. We is heading for Bear on I-10 about a mile out of Shaky Town. I says, Pigpen, this here's a rubber duck and I'm about to put the hammer down.
Cause we got a little convoy knocking through the night. Yeah, we got a little convoy. Ain't she beautiful sight? Come on, join.
Good morning and welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is the number one song from this week in 1976, at least on the pop charts. It actually hit the country charts in 1975.
I couldn't contain my enthusiasm, and I gave it all away.
You did. That is Convoy, performed by?
C.W. McCall.
C.W. McCall. You were close. Started with T.J., then C.J. C.W. McCall, whose real name, Bill Fries.
How the heck did he get C.W. McCall out of Bill Fries?
Well, he wanted to countrify it. Although Bill Fries is kind of a country
CW country died name. Last year.
Well, what about Bill?
He died with him.
Okay, I see. So there was a movie based on this song.
Not as good.
No. And they redid the song a little bit and made it a little raunchier, some inappropriate language, you know, because I think the movie was rated at a level. Back in 1976, they had to be really careful what they said and sang on the radio. Now,
correct.
Now they can put all kinds of garbage on there, but... I love that one. On that same album, there's actually a Colorado-based song. Do you recall on that album of C.W. McCall, another popular song of his? I don't know. It didn't become as popular as Convoy. But
no, you stumped me on that one.
Wolf Creek Pass.
There was a song called
Wolf
Creek Pass?
Wolf Creek Pass, which is all about a semi coming down Wolf Creek Pass losing his brakes.
Oh, that
stinks. And getting going faster and faster and faster. And the line in there about the telephone poles going by like a picket fence. That's how fast he was going, is the telephone poles look like a picket
fence. How'd it end?
Not well, if in my recollection. But I don't recall the entire song. I just remember I
Well, Micah, see if you can find Wolf Creek Pass. Let's play a snippet of that. Never heard of C.J. McCall.
C.W.
McCall, yeah. Wolf Creek Pass.
Yeah, and the album, I have that.
Did they make a movie out of that?
The album had a picture of him with his C.J. Wrangler, his Jeep Wrangler on the cover.
Did they make a movie out of Wolf Creek Pass?
No, that was not as popular of a song.
Wow, we found it fast.
Here it is.
So me and Earl was hauling chickens on the flatbed out of Wiggins. We'd spent all night on the uphill side of 37 miles of hell called Wolf Creek Pass, which is up on the Great Divide. And we was sitting there sucking toothpicks and drinking knee-highs and onion soup mix. And I says, Earl, let's mail a card to Mother and then send them chickens on down the other side. Yeah, let's give them a ride.
Well, how did the chickens end up in all this? You didn't tell me they were hauling livestock.
There were feathers flying out the back.
You didn't tell me he lost his brakes on Wolf Creek Pass with a truck full of chickens.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to listen to that whole song later.
Yeah, we can get you the whole album if you want.
Listen anyway, to that song, Michael. Let us know what happens to the chickens.
Well, we have a caller, just so you know.
All right, well, I'm just worried about the chickens now.
I know. Well,
drinking knee-highs and sucking on toothpicks. Those poor chickens.
Yeah.
All right, we have a caller.
We do have a caller. So, good morning, Rick from Greeley. Thanks for calling this morning. What can we do for you?
Well, before I get to my question, if you're going to play songs like that, you ought to include Harry Chapin's 30,000 pounds of bananas.
Oh.
He was hauling bananas and got into a car problem too?
Yeah, big truck, big semi went into Scranton, Pennsylvania. It's actually a true story. But
with 30,000 pounds of bananas.
That's the name of the song, 30,000 pounds of bananas.
It's a good thing that truck wasn't heading in the opposite direction of Wolf Creek Pass with all those chickens.
Yeah, they'd have slid everywhere, wouldn't they? Banana peels and chicken feathers.
What can we do for you this morning, Ed?
Rick.
Rick.
Not everyone is Ed.
I got Ed on my mind. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Sometimes when you talk about people in the, that have called before you, you call them George.
Well, honestly,
if you want to call me George?
Honestly, Jim has a bit of a man crush on Ed. So
I do know.
As Ed's name comes up, it's all that he can think about.
What do you have, George? Goodness,
Rick.
Rick.
So, my wife and I are both retired. We're in our mid-60s. Well, one of us is a little more than mid-60s.
Who shall remain nameless.
Yes. if one of us, say, should go into a nursing home, and let's say by that time we have become, we've depleted... I guess how much, if we end up having to, if Medicare ends up, or Medicaid rather, ends up being involved in this, in our nursing home experience, what happens to things like, can they raid your safety deposit box? Can they, how much money has to be spent down? I called a while back about, I'm the one, if you recall, kind of made fun of or blew the questions on getting health care or getting nursing home care.
Right. You intentionally fudged
right.
the answers to those. Yes.
Yeah. So my wife is very concerned about what happens. I know if we just go into a nursing home and we pay for it ourselves, then nobody does anything. They don't go into our safety deposit box. It's just money that we pay.
Correct.
But when Medicaid becomes involved, I guess that's where we need a little help.
Well, I want to preface this that Chris and I are not attorneys, and we do have Jan Lord. And one of the things that we can try to do is get Jan back on the show and specifically address this on another show. So I'm going to talk in generalities.
Perfect.
Okay, I got it. I have problems sometimes talking, but if I slow down, I'm okay. So we're going to give just some general advice from the best that we know it. And then we'll bring Jan Lord in, who has to be the one of the most knowledgeable attorneys in Northern Colorado on this subject. But what will happen? Are they going to raid your safe deposit box? No. However, what they do is at your passing and the passing of the last spouse or whoever passes away last, they will look at your estate in its totality. And as they look at the estate, if there are assets that are found, hey, gee, nobody knew about the 1,600 ounces of gold he had in the safe deposit box, they will put a, I guess for lack of a better term, if Pete was here, he'd know the legal term, but they'll put a lien on the estate and go after that.
Right. So you are required to divulge sources of income and assets for both spouses in this Medicaid qualification process. And if you try to hide assets, a safe deposit box would be an obvious place, or not declaring property that you own somewhere, that sort of thing. Generally, the thought is once you pass away, that those things are going to come to light because they're going to be tried to be passed on to some kind of beneficiary or dependents or, you know, kids or whoever you're trying to give it to. And it'll become exposed to observation at that point. And so Medicaid wants to make sure that you weren't gaming the system, so to speak, and receiving benefits that you didn't qualify for under their rules. So no, they don't start digging around for that stuff. They're pretty thorough looking for things during the application process. But as you can imagine, if you have something in a box under your mattress, they're not going to find that sort of thing initially. And maybe they never would, but if it comes out just as Jim described, they don't just when you pass away, they don't just walk away. They continue investigating and make sure that they have received all the offsets that they're due.
And there are some states, Rick, and I'm not sure. Here's where I wish Pete was here. And Pete, if you're listening and you want to call in and let us know if Colorado is one of these states, there is a legal term for it. And I just remember from reading and studying some of this, where states have a right to go after beneficiaries of the estate to pay some of the debts of you. And if they find that you try to pass assets to children, they can go after those children for those debts. So some states, and the reason I'm mentioning states is Medicaid is a state-federal partnership. And some states take it very, very seriously and have specific laws, and there's a legal term for those laws where you can be held responsible for the debts of someone who owes a debt to the state. So I'm not sure if Colorado is one of those or not. Pete will be on the show next week. We can ask him, and we'll have that. We'll have him address that. But we'll also have Jan Lord address that as well. Back to your wife's situation of what they're going to allow. Let's say you go into the nursing home. Your wife will be known as the community spouse. They call her the community spouse because she's still in the community. And you're the institutionalized spouse. You're the spouse that needs the help. Well, Medicaid is for indigent. It is not for people who have the ability to pay. So Medicaid, first of all, is going to make sure all money is spent down. Now, they don't want to totally impoverish the community spouse, but they don't make it very easy for him or her either. You can keep approximately $113,000. I don't know. It's $113,000 and change, but let's just call it $113,000. A house and a car. So that's what they will let your wife keep, the house, the car, and about $113,000. Everything else has to be spent down. All your IRAs, perhaps all her IRAs. And that's where people get nailed. Because as you take money out of the IRAs, you're going to have to pay taxes on it, pushing you into a much higher tax bracket. Now, some of those medical expenses may be deductible for you, some may not, minimizing the tax burden, but you're going to have to pay down all your assets, sell any second or third homes you may have, sell everything down. Everything is considered. You have to be indigent. So you have to spend a lot down. The other problem with Medicaid is going to be you don't get your choice of where you're going. It's wherever the next Medicaid bed is, whether that's going to be Greeley, Fort Collins, Aurora, or Avada, who knows? You're going where the next Medicaid bed is. And you're generally not going to get the best rooms in the house, so to speak. The government says you have to have a certain amount of Medicaid beds to some of these places that will accept Medicaid. Not every place does. So you're probably going to be in a room with two or three other people, and it's not going to be a really great room. So I'm just trying to let people know, those who want to use Medicaid as a planning tool, it's not this great panacea. And what it does is exposes the community spouse now to having pretty much nothing left. And then what happens if she needs help in the future? Well, there's going to be no private pay option for her. And that means she may have to go into a facility as a Medicaid patient from the get-go. And that's even harder to get in. Most of the time, people will go in as private pay initially so they can get accepted. And then the facilities will work with them and work with their family on trying to spend down their assets and wait for a Medicaid bed to open so they can at least stay in the same facility. But when you go in as just a Medicaid patient, you're now on a list, and you got to hope the next Medicaid bed that opens up is somewhere around you.
Right. And there's not only is there an asset limitation, like Jim mentioned, there's also income limitations as well. So the spend down of assets has to occur, and then only a certain any income over a certain limit. And those, again, the rules are very complicated. Any income over certain limits has to be paid in to the system, and Medicaid then will only pick up the balance.
If you go to our website for the radio show, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
No, it's on the Retirement and IRA
Show. Excuse me,
I
get confused. The Retirement and IRA Show.com, or just go to Jim Helps, jimhelps.com. And right on the homepage, you'll see a big link for our radio show's website. Go to that one, Rick, and then in the search box, and I'll have Chris test it. I wonder if he could search Jan Lord, L-O-R-D.
Or Medicaid, I think, would probably.
Because she did come in last year and talk about all this.
5 months ago she was in, and she gave us all the specific
limits. Yes, all the dollar amounts and how it all works. So you can listen to those shows right from that website. You just click on the show. Chris is searching now to see what you have to type into the search box to find. Hopefully Jan Lord will pop up on our, at least Medicaid. But that will be another thing you can do, because Jan spent a good 2 hours talking about all this.
And I did hear some of that.
Okay. Okay.
When she was there. So.
And I know she wants to come back on, so I'll try to get her back on. I'll chat with Pete. Her and Pete are very good friends. And we'll get Jan back on to address a lot of this as well.
Okay. Can you give me just like...
Actually, if you just type in the word Lord, her last name, on the Retirement and IRA Show, there she was here for two shows on October 3rd and October 10th. And we went over all of this stuff in great, great detail, and she answered lots of common questions. And those were two great shows. And they were long enough ago, I don't recall off the top of my head all the exact limits. But those two shows, I think, would answer 90% of the questions you might have.
Okay. Well, that's wonderful. Thank you so very much.
Mm-hmm. And did you have another thing you said? Are you all set?
No. I hit the other one first, and then that one you just talked about was actually the second question.
Perfect.
Oh, I know what my other thing was. this is still on the second question, but if your only income is Social Security, then is that given then to the nursing home and they give you your allowance?
It depends what spouses, it depends, Ed, what spouses go, no, Rick.
Rick,
what spouse, sorry. I still got Ed on my mind.
I know. It's that man crush.
It depends what spouse is going in. If you go in and the only income your wife has is Social Security, chances are that Social Security is going to be under the income test. So there'll be no problem there. Now, she goes in, yes, All of her Social Security goes to covering her care. Medicaid does let her keep $50 a month of income as a nursing home patient. I guess that's to buy cigarettes or whatever. But you get $50 a month in the nursing home as income. Everything else will go towards the care for her.
Okay. So if you sit around smoking cigarettes and watching Cats and Kangaroo, you got $50 a month to do it.
You do. You can take that $50 and buy whatever nursing home patients buy with $50.
The candy cart that comes around.
Gentlemen, thank you very, very much.
Okay.
And I'll go on your website and re-listen to what...
In the search box on our website... just type in Lord, L-O-R-D. And any iTunian listeners who may be listening to this throughout the country, bear in mind Jan is a Colorado attorney. So most of the advice she gave is how Medicaid works in Colorado, but it would be very, very similar in most states.
Yep. Great. Thanks a lot for the call, Rick.
I thank you for your answers, and have a great day, and Happy New Year to you.
Hey, you too. Stay warm out there. Still a little chilly today. Perfect.
Okay. It's two Eds called.
Two Eds. We got Eds. So back to our, do we even remember the end of the
Our iTunian question? Listener from Oregon. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to that strategy. Remember we left and I was saying that the government in not only my opinion, in many people's opinions, they are going to go after the stretch IRA. And they are going to force non-spouse beneficiaries to close retirement accounts within 5 years, which on very large retirement accounts is going to subject them to an immense amount of taxes. And I believe that's why the government is doing it. They know they've got all this money in there. If they let people take out a little every year throughout their lives, the government's not going to get much in taxes. If they have to take most of it out right away, government is going to get a windfall in taxes. And that's why they're getting rid of the stretch. There's no other reason except for that. I don't care what the government says, that's what they're trying to do is get money. So one of the strategies that you can do, and we talked about this gentleman's case in Oregon, and if you're a new listener, if you just started, go back, listen to the beginning of the show off of iTunes or off of our website to hear what we're talking about. However, one of the strategies he can do is to use life insurance and leave life insurance. Remember, he's in a unique situation. Based on his email, and we have to make a lot of assumptions here, but based on his email, especially if he waits to age 70 for his Social Security, he is going to have a tremendous amount of lifetime guaranteed income.
Right, through various pensions and Social Security combined.
Mm-hmm. So he may be, we don't know because we're not working with him, but he may be in a situation where he has excess income every month. He doesn't need all that money. He could be in that situation. Or at very least, remember, he had $2 million of assets of investments sitting off to the side. Now, because we haven't talked to him, we didn't know, but we extrapolated that most of that was in retirement accounts through the government's thrift savings plan. And I went on to explain that if he took that $2 million account and wanted to leave it to children, that is going to be nailed in taxes. Instead, what he could do is take some of his excess guaranteed lifetime income, not all of it, but some of the excess, some of the money that he doesn't need. Or, if you want to play devil's advocate, he indicated he's going to have about $8,500 a month of income. If he needs all $8,500 a month of guaranteed lifetime income, he can take a small portion of his TSP. He can take a little bit. Maybe he has $2 million in there. He could take $400,000 of it. I'm just pulling those numbers out of the blue. He could take a little bit of those numbers and say to the TSP, take $300,000 of my TSP and pay me a lifetime annuity on it. The TSP is one of the few retirement plans that allow that. Mm-hmm. For listeners who don't have a TSP, let's say you had $2 million in an IRA, you could take a few hundred thousand of your IRA, transfer it tax and penalty free to an insurance company, and say, give me a single premium immediate annuity. Give me a lifetime annuity stream from this. What we essentially did, whether he does it as an annuity or as a TSP payment, he can turn a portion of his $2 million, a very small portion, into another lifetime stream of guaranteed income that will continue for as long as he lives. He can take that money now and direct it right into a life insurance policy. Why do I prefer doing it the way I described, turning it into an annuity payment or a TSP guaranteed payment? Because no matter what happens, Chris, whether he lives for 10 years or 30 years, that company has to continue to pay him a set amount of money every year. And then he sets it up automatically where that money goes directly into a life insurance policy that will guarantee a $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, however much he wants to buy or how much he qualifies to buy, guaranteed inheritance. So we've done
this.
And
it's a special kind of inheritance because the proceeds from life insurance are tax-free.
That's what I'm getting at. So he can take his TSP, peel off a few hundred thousand, leverage it through life insurance into another $2 million policy, say. Now he can leave the $2 million life insurance policy to his children, and he still has a TSP that now has $1.8 million in it because we peeled off $200,000 in my example to buy the income payment. But that $1.8 million TSP continues to grow, and what he can do is—
Or shrink. He continues to be there doing its thing.
But what he does is he leaves the TSP to charity. This is what I said, if he's charitably inclined, because the TSP, which would have been subject to nearly 50% income taxes if he left it to humans, would go to a charity 100% tax-free. And the life insurance policy, which could have $2 million or more, there's different types of life insurance policies. He could buy one with a growing cash value. So maybe by time he dies, there's $3 million in there. We don't know. It depends how he designs the life insurance. But all of that life insurance goes to his beneficiaries 100% tax-free. And all of the TSP goes to charities 100% tax-free. And his old employer, the federal government, gets nothing.
Mm-hmm. I call that a win-win-lose situation.
Win.
Kids win, no taxes. Charity wins because they get money that they might have not have gotten before, also tax-free. Only loser.
Government
that doesn't get the tax revenue that
they need to pay other retirees.
Right.
But no, that's what people hire us for, is that, you know, how can I manage this? So in his case, on face value, everything looked fine. I just don't know if he's paying enough attention to unique planning strategies that his situation now allows him.
Right. And this was just one example of the flexibility that he's gained. This may or may not be appropriate for him in particular. We took his email and ran a lot into it and ran with it in a certain direction just to illustrate the types of things that he could do and options that are out there when you're in a situation where you really have two of the things people hope to have: guaranteed income on one hand, which in this case is Social Security, and retirement pension plans, and then you also have, on the other hand, an asset base, a substantial asset base. The people who are less lucky but still in a pretty good situation might have one or the other. We talk a lot about people that have are pension rich but asset poor. Maybe they have the pension situation similar to George in Oregon that we just talked about, but they don't have the asset base. That actually happens more frequently than having both. They get one or the other. And then there's a whole bunch of people out there that are stuck in this more modern, I wouldn't call it better by any means, but this more modern retirement system where they have no pension income other than Social Security, and then they have 401ks, IRAs, etc., which is just an asset base, which is, in my opinion, the most complicated version, because you are stuck with a big asset, but you there's no guaranteed path to making sure that that bucket of assets that you've got are going to do what you want all the way until you die.
Exactly,
without proper planning.
What there is, Chris, what makes what you said is just 100% correct. I love it, because what happened when Tom Bain is a gentleman who created 401ks. We talked about Tom in the past. In the early 80s, he created them. What happened when Tom came up with 401ks? He didn't. The government inadvertently created him in Section 401k of the tax code. He's the one who put two and two together and figured, hey, I think we can do this. What happens is when you have a 401k and no guaranteed pension, all the risk is on your shoulders.
Right.
There is no risk pooling anymore. What is a pension? What's an annuity, an income annuity? What's Social Security? It's risk pooling. There's millions and millions of people in this massive pool. Some are going to live a very long time. Some are going to die tomorrow. But they're all pooling the risk of longevity, of living a long time together and sharing in this pool. When you have a 401k, you're on your own. And when that money runs out, it's gone.
Mm-hmm. And you've only got one life to spend. Your life isn't necessarily
exactly
the average lifespan. It is what it is. And there's a great mismatch. And that's where the risk is. There's the risk in that your asset life will not match your physical life.
Absolutely. And 401ks are so everybody thinks 401ks risk is the market. We didn't even talk about the market today. I want to talk about the market because it was going crazy. But all your risk is in a 401k, and everybody thinks, oh, it's the market. It's not. Yeah, the market is risk, but there's much more risk you're carrying in a 401k because you're not pooling the risk with everyone. You know, when you buy a homeowner's policy, I pay $1,200 a year to State Farm to insure our office in Fort Collins, which is worth about $400,000. How can State Farm, insure my office, which is worth $400,000, for $1,200 a year? They're pooling it with millions of other offices and buildings. They know only a certain amount are going to fall and suffer a loss. If I was taking my $1,200 and putting it in the bank to cover losses and trying to self-insure, I couldn't do it.
You'd never save up enough money to pay for it if something happened.
And if I say, hey, but that $1,200 is in my bank, it's mine. Yes, but one catastrophic loss and wow, I'm SOL. I don't have enough. So we risk pool. And a pension, Social Security, and annuity is risk pooling longevity risk. The risk, which is a very good problem to have, that you live a very long time. State Farm, when they insure my house, is insuring the risk it burns, which is a terrible thing, and I don't want that to happen. But I kind of like longevity risk, Chris. I kind of want to live a very long time. So I would love that risk to fall on me. I don't want my place to burn, but I want to fall victim to longevity risk. I want to live a long time. Well, in order to do that, you need to insure that risk. And that's what pensions, Social Security, and annuities do. The problem is private employers don't offer pensions anymore. Most people don't understand Social Security. And most people are taught to fear or ignore annuities, which I think is abhorrent, because a very good annuity has a very good purpose in many people's retirement.
Right. So we are at the bottom of the hour for this break. So if you have a question like Rick and Steve did, please call in. Our number is 970-353-1310 or 877-353-1310. We'd love to hear from you.
We did get an email just now from our Duluth listener.
Oh, good. We can talk about that when we
George in Duluth. We'll get to him when we come back.
Perfect. So when we come back from this final break, we're going to hear a song, the number one song from 35 years ago. And those of you who have listened for a while realize that Social Security bases your benefit, your retirement benefit, on your top 35 earnings years. So that's why we look back 35 years at this point in time. So the number one song from 1981 for this week is from a songwriter that 3 weeks after their murder, this popular song hit number one.
So they were dead? They were murdered?
Correct.
It's got to be John Lennon.
Well, now here you go, giving it away before the break. You're doing this
was
in
I
reverse
right?
order. It is John Lennon.
Wow. Pulled that out of nowhere.
For the second week in a row. So we'll find out who exactly that was, for sure, and what song it is.
Well, you just said
this.
It was John Lennon.
Okay. We'll find out what the song was, Smarty Pants, after this short break here on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Our life together is so precious. Together we have grown. We have grown. Although our love is still special.
Well, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is the number one song this week in 1981. John Lennon. And his hit, Just Like Starting Over, remains number one for the second week. The day this song was released, Yoko Ono, the ever-controversial Yoko Ono, hired a skywriter to write Happy Birthday above New York for John to see.
Was it his birthday?
I believe it was, but the song hadn't hit number one yet. It didn't hit number one until after he was murdered. So this all kind of happened to him. Happy Birthday, killed. Song goes to number one.
Very sad situation.
Very sad situation. Yoko Ono is still around, though.
She is. Mm-hmm. You just wonder how much more beautiful music would have been created if he wasn't taken from us that soon. Okay.
True. And all the better Muppets episodes that would be around if
Jim Henson hadn't gone. Right.
Do you know that Jim Henson and Sammy Davis Jr. passed away on the same day?
I did not know that.
I still remember that day. It was actually kind of sad. It really, the Jim Henson one really hit me because I grew up watching the Muppets and Sesame Street and everything. That one actually honestly bothered me more than the John Lennon issue because I wasn't really of the era of John mm-hmm. Lennon so much.
But you were of
But Jim Henson, it really bothered me, especially the whole story behind it that mm-hmm. he just kind of had the flu and didn't go to the doctor and then passed away. That was...
One never knows.
Yes.
That's why we do estate planning, but Pete's not here, so we can't talk about that. Okay, so we're going to give, because we do this whole song thing. Mm-hmm. We start looking back at a song from 1935, because that's when Social Security was first created. Then we look at the number one song in America 40 years ago, because when Social Security first started, they had a calculation called 40 elapsed years, and they would use that in determining the benefit of the original Social Security recipients. That has since morphed into what they call 35 elapsed years.
And 35 they use computational years.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And they use your highest 35 years of earnings to determine how much they're going to pay you. So that's why we look back 1935, 40 years ago, 35 years ago, because we do have a blog, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. And we use this opportunity to lead into what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
What's new?
So this week on HelpWithMySocialSecurity.com, we look at a situation where these new Social Security changes we've been talking about and everybody's been hearing about cost a middle-class couple $21,000.
And this was a real case.
This is a
we
real case.
We changed the facts to protect mm-hmm. the innocent, as mm-hmm. Dragnet would say.
Yep. But I wrote this really to illustrate what we're seeing a lot of, which is not rich people that were so-called taking advantage of loopholes, which was the reasoning behind these Social Security changes in the first place. The argument was there were unintended strategies available to people only of the rich category. And it was unfair that those strategies were available to them and not available to everyone else, so we should do away with them. Well, this is a case of a very modest, a middle-class couple that had been planning on utilizing these certain Social Security claiming strategies, which I detail in the post. They are right in the heart of claiming Social Security. They are in their 60s, so these are decisions that are being made now. And I illustrate why, under these changes, they lose the ability to do one of the things that used to be allowed but retain the ability to do something else. So they kind of fall in this halfway. They got grandfathered into one technique but were barred from another technique. The loss of that one technique essentially makes it so the wife cannot claim spousal benefits for 2 full years where she otherwise would have been able to. And the sum total of the cost to them in this illustration, I show how it out of pocket is going to cost them in the next few years $21,000, which for them, being middle class, not having a lot of other assets, the Social Security income was a very, very important part in their retirement
plan. It was a huge hit to their retirement.
And the rug got pulled out from under them here in November without any significant ability to adjust their strategy or change their plans. It was too late for them, and they're just going to have to find a way to live on $21,000 less.
And we're talking $21,000 not over the course of their life. A lot of times Social Security analysis say, well, if you optimize, you're going to get $100,000 more. It sounds great. $100,000 over a 30-year period. This wasn't the case here.
No.
This was $21,000 that they would have received over a few year period.
2 years. Over
2 years.
Over a 2 year period in, I believe, 4 years from now.
4 years from now, they would have received $21,000. So that's a massive hit. Mm-hmm. It's not this that this cost them $21,000 over the course of their retirement. This cost them $21,000 over the course of a few years. That's a massive hit. This was just a middle-class couple. They didn't have much in assets. They worked all their lives. They were expecting this. And the government, your representatives, and your president, because Obama's the one who initially pushed this, and of course the Republicans caved and went for it, it's where our government decided, nah, we're going to get rid of it. But what irks me again, they got rid of it under the guise that only people of means were utilizing what they called, quote unquote, unintended loopholes. They weren't unintended and they weren't loopholes. They passed a law in 2000, the Senior Citizen Freedom to Work Act, that created the ability to do this. And then they turned around and said, wow, people are actually doing it. This is a loophole.
Right.
No, it's not a loophole, you idiot. You created it. And it's not just wealthy people who were doing it. Middle class people were doing it. Mm-hmm. This was a hit on the middle class. I said it before, mm-hmm. and I'll say it again. And I am appalled.
And it is, because rich people, they don't really care about Social Security strategies, because
no.
Social Security is such a minuscule part of their planning. They don't really care. You know, yes, it's money that's coming in. They like it. They earned it. You know, they paid into the system. They are eligible to claim. But trying to deploy a sophisticated strategy in order to maximize their Social Security that they're allowed to receive wasn't something a lot of them did or took very seriously. Middle class, though, when Social Security is compromising 30, 40, 50% of their ability to retire, it was important to make sure they get every dollar to which they were entitled. And they were absolutely entitled to this money since the Freedom to Work Act back in the year of 2000. So here we are, you know, 16 years later, and now suddenly you can't do it.
And that's why I am appalled, absolutely appalled, that AARP caved. And they caved.
They didn't just cave. They came out in
support of it. And again, I'm not I very rarely, extremely rarely talk politics here. But AARP will support anything that the Democratic side pushes, and they will fight vehemently against anything that a Republican side pushes. I'm sorry. It is as clear as day. President Obama is the one who pushed for this in his 2014 budget. He came out in the 2014 budget and said he wants to see this gone. Both political parties acquiesced and said, yes, let's get rid of it. So this is on the Republican shoulder as much as a Democrat shoulder. But in my opinion, AARP could have killed this in a heartbeat by sending out one press release that Congress wants to cut the benefits of middle-class Americans, and this would have been pulled in a heartbeat. And they never did. And they didn't because, in my opinion, they were supporting the president and what he was pushing. But for AARP, which is supposed to be an advocacy group for people over 50, what is supposed to be an advocacy group for middle-class, hardworking Americans over the age of 50 who are retiring, for them to simply come out and support the cutting of our Social Security benefits without so much as a discussion. At least let's hold a national discussion. Let the Congress people come home, hold town hall meetings, and hear from their constituents that, yes, this is a wonderful thing. Cut our Social Security. We're okay with it. Without so much as even a discussion. And that's what ticks me off the most, and that's why I'm no longer a member. I cannot support a group that isn't looking out for us and are too blinded by political partisanship. I don't care who you vote for. I don't care if you vote for Bush, Obama. I don't care if you vote next week for Clinton or next year or this year, whenever the hell it is, for Clinton or Sanders or Trump or any of the other guys who are running, because you don't even know who they are. Trump gets all the attention. I don't care who you vote for. If someone is going to come after Social Security, that's what's going to tick me off as a retirement planner.
Well, and they need to come after it in a logical, long-term approach.
Exactly.
Not this suddenly in the middle of the night one week, let's pull the trigger on something that kicks in 6 months.
And let's not say only rich people are doing this.
Right, no.
That's how they pawned it off. Oh, they're going after the rich people. So all the lemmings and sheeple who don't pay attention, the ones that I'm getting angry over, the ones that AARP is supposed to be looking out for, aren't going to be screwed like they were. And here's a classic. This is a real person Chris is talking about. They came into our office. They were shocked when they saw that they were going to lose $21,000 that they need. This from a government that spends $21,000 in a second. Anyways, I'll get off my high horse.
So, to maybe calmly express... Changes to Social Security absolutely need to take place, but they can be done over a long period of time with some thought and discussion about it. And there's been a lot of thought and discussion done. There just hasn't been anything actually deployed. So to have then just suddenly these kind of short-term, poorly thought-out, not discussed concepts put into law overnight, because this really happened within just a couple of days during the budget process – this is not the way to fix Social Security.
And you don't hear a peep.
And there's a tiny bit. You know, this did make an impact. This is going to save the Social Security system some money. The way it saves is it doesn't pay it out.
$9 billion.
It doesn't pay it out. Well, that is a tiny drop in the bucket, but it's harming real people in the short term. People that don't have – if there's something that's going to change your life 20 years from now, you have no excuse – if you're unprepared.
You have time to
You've
plan.
You've got time to plan, time to adjust yourself, time to absorb and understand what's going on. If you have something that's going to hit you in 6 months or a year or 2 years or just a couple of years, I guess 2 years is a couple of years, that isn't really fair.
That is completely unfair. Absolutely.
And that's really, I think, what bothers me the most. It isn't that I'm not opposed to all possible cuts to Social Security. Social Security needs to be fixed, and part of it could be cutting certain things out of it in the long term.
But this wasn't one of them.
This is not how this happened or how it should have happened.
As Michael Kitskis pointed out, this came about by Boston College's Center for Retirement Research, Fine Center. Love it. Love Boston. I'm from there. Not too much of a fan of Boston College because I went to Boston University, so we're kind of competitors. But I'd say that in all gist. But they came out with a study that said if everybody took advantage of these claiming strategies, it's going to cost Social Security $9 billion. First of all, I don't think it's a cost. It's not a cost because they're giving them money. You know, if Nancy Pelosi can come out and say, when you pay unemployment benefits to people, that's an economic growth because they're going to take that unemployment benefit and spend it. Well, I can say when you take $9 billion and give it to retirees through Social Security, that's economic growth because they're going to spend it. So you can't have one can't be an economic growth and the other can't be an economic cost. Boston College didn't come out and say if you continue to pay everybody who's entitled to unemployment, it's going to cost this much. Oh, no, that's not a cost. You're giving it to lazy people to sit around and do nothing. But God forbid you give people who worked all their lives some money. That's a cost? No. So if it's an economic boon, then it's an economic boon. That $9 billion would have found its way into the economy if you want to be logical here. But as Michael Kitskis pointed out, it's not a cost. It's only a cost if everyone, not everybody, was going to do the strategy. But also $9 billion. This government spends more than $9 billion in a few hours. I think it's 8 or 16 hours they spent that much or less. It's crazy. It's such a minuscule. So anyways, we chatted about this before. I want to get to the email question from the gentleman in Duluth.
Okay, perfect. So that's what's new on Help With My Social Security.
All right, see, you had to get me going. Okay, so back to this Duluth. So first of all, it's nice to see George in Duluth. We won't use his real name. Is still listening to us. He must listen to us. He didn't want to call. I don't think he likes talking to you. So he sent me an email. He didn't send it to you.
Hope it's a short email because we only have a few minutes
yes,
left.
Yes, it is. He says, hello. This week I will be meeting with the administrator of my 401k. We are looking at switching to a Roth 401k. What questions do I need to ask in what advice? What questions do I need to ask? Any advice you can give would be appreciated. I'm guessing what George in Duluth is saying, that he might be on the retirement board or he might be part of a group of employees who are concerned, and they're meeting with the administrator of the 401k and maybe presenting to them the thought that they want to offer a Roth 401k as well. So one thing that I want to correct him on, you're not switching to a Roth 401k. What you're looking to do is offer a Roth 401k as well as a traditional 401k.
And the employee has the option.
Right. What happens is the employer, through the administrator of the 401k, has to change their 401k documents to allow a Roth option. So that's what they're going to do, is they're going to allow the option for employees to put some of their money into a 401k Roth option. But the traditional 401k, George in Duluth, does not go away. That stays there.
His email, looking at it here, might mean that he's personally looking at switching to contributing to a Roth because they're both being offered at his work. It could be interpreted like you mentioned, that he's making the decision.
Oh, that's how I interpret it.
But it could be just that he personally is looking at switching over to the Roth.
One thing, if it's my thought that you are looking at doing a proposal to the administrator and the employer to offer Roth 401ks as an option, my only recommendation during that meeting is to at the same time have them authorize conversions. You can convert a traditional 401k into a Roth 401k if the plan allows. If you're presenting to them that, hey, we want you to allow us to have Roth 401ks, the only recommendation is not only do you want them to allow Roth 401ks, you want them to also authorize, as they update their plan documents, to allow a Roth 401k. Have them update the plan document to also allow the ability to convert.
Right. And then you can have that option in the future.
If it's Chris's opinion that you already have Roth 401ks and you're going in there to decide if you want to contribute, then that's something totally different.
Right. And you should ask, do they allow conversions and you know, that kind of thing? What are the investment options in there and that kind of thing? So.
But other than that, offering a Roth 401k option is very easy. The plan documents have to be updated, so the retirement board or whoever is in charge of the retirement plan needs to authorize verbiage change in the plan documents. The custodians, the companies offering the 401ks, they're already set up for this. It's no big deal for them. They just, okay, we're going to start creating these accounts. So that's very easy. Just make sure when they update the plan documents to allow Roth 401ks, they also allow Roth conversions, so it gives you a little more planning flexibility.
Perfect. So we're at the end of another Retirement and IRA show. If you have a question you haven't been able to call in and get, you'd like to talk to us, probably the best way to do that is go to jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. On there you can find the contact information, get a hold of the office. come see Jim for a coffee and a second opinion. We will be back next week. It'll be a recorded show, but if you have any emails you'd like us to get to, we would be more than happy to answer those. Jim@jimhelps.com, or you can find that contact form on jimhelps.com. So thanks for joining us this morning on the Retirement and IRA Show. Happy New Year to everybody. We'll see you next week.
Missed any of today's show? Listen again on iTunes or the Retirement and IRA Show.com.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.